Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. Most in-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit dxengineering.com/hamnation. By ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation. And by FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy-to-use cloud accounting software helping small business owners thrive. Try it free for 30 days at freshbooks.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode 367 for September 12th, 2018. Saturn and the Nation, prepare for Florence. Good evening. Welcome to Ham Nation. Tonight, Bob Hall is not with us, and neither is Don Wilbanks. I'm George, W5JDX. I'll be driving the bus tonight, and hopefully we'll all make it through. A lot to talk about tonight. Great show for you, regardless of the others being missing tonight. First up, we've got our friend out there to the west. It's Gordo, WB6NOA. Hi, Gordo.
Well, hi there, George, and hi to our Ham Nation viewers and listeners and WTWW listeners. We've got a full show, but before we start, I want to say that we are all thinking of those of you on the East Coast, because we understand from Kevin, our net controller out of Florida, that he even had a lightning strike that took out his computer. So stay safe on the East Coast, and we'll be watching the weather for you. This weekend is the Peoria Amateur Radio Club Superfest. I've been to it before, and I've played Peoria, and it's a good one, September 1-5 and 1-6. Gloucester, up in New Jersey, Gloucester County Amateur Radio Club, having their 40th Hamfest on Sunday. They've got 75 vendors. Wow, that'll be attending that one. This weekend, I'll be up at the Wind System Technical Workshop. And if you get a chance, go to winsystem.org and see what's going to be going on up in the north part of Southern California. That'll be a four-day deal. They are the biggie on IRLP. And technical night is Friday evening, so I hope you'll tune in. Route 66, everybody's on the air, including Bob Heil. Probably that's where he is. That's going to be going on until the end of this weekend, so I hope you work a Route 66 station. And finally, Wyoming, Bob will be on Skype. I will be there, too, on this Saturday, and the Wyoming Ham Fest is going to be a big one, and it's called Wyoming HamCon, and it's an ARRL section get-together. So it's going to be a good one. That is this Saturday when Bob and I will be on Skype. So, George, that's my story at this end. And again, we wish all of you on the East Coast to stay safe. George?
Okay, Gordo. We'll be looking forward to more from you in just a moment. I did want to mention one thing. As long as we're doing some announcements here, don't forget the D-Star QSO party is coming up. September 22nd, that's 0 UTC to 2400 UTC. All you D-Star fans, jump in there and have a great time. It's a worldwide event, so it'll be a lot of fun. Well, now we'll go to Amanda, because Amanda, you've got a special guest with you tonight, and it's a very timely topic you'll be covering here, isn't it?
That's absolutely correct. We're going to be talking more about Hurricane Florence, and hopefully she doesn't do as much damage as they predict. But with me tonight, I have Bill Feast. WB8BZH, and he's with Saturn, and he's going to tell us kind of some of the things that Saturn's going to be doing to prep for this hurricane and give us a rundown of what they normally do. So, Bill, tell us what Saturn is. Does and what is your role with them?
Okay. Well, we'll start with my role. I am the National Saturn Liaison for the Salvation Army. Saturn stands for the Salvation Army Team Emergency Radio Network. And it is a group of Salvation Army Emergency Disaster Services volunteers who are also licensed amateur radio operators. And they have come together to provide the Salvation Army with auxiliary and emergency communications and technical support during disasters or special events. So that's primarily what Saturn is and about.
Okay. And you also privately work for the Salvation Army, is that correct? What do you do for them?
Yes, I am an employee of the Salvation Army. I'm also a member of the Salvation Army Church. But what I do for them is I am the Divisional Disaster Liaison for the Alabama, Louisiana, and Mississippi Division of the Salvation Army. So I cover those three states. My responsibilities are to develop and maintain our relationships with both our government partners in disasters as well as our nonprofit partners in disasters. So I work very closely with many of the other familiar nonprofits, such as the American Red Cross, and the Southern Baptist, the ARRL, and the overarching coalition of all the nonprofits, which is called Voluntary Organizations Active in Disaster, or VOAD.
Okay. And how many people do you have in your network that volunteer for Saturn?
We have about 4,000 people on the roster in the United States, and probably another 200 to 250 internationally.
Okay, and what are your plans for helping with Hurricane Florence? Sorry, I can say that.
Say that 10 times fast, right?
Yes.
Our plans for Florence starting tomorrow. At noon Central, 1 o'clock Eastern, we will be activating our international single sideband net on 14.265 megahertz with a backup of 14.312 megahertz. We'll activate at noon Central, and we'll close the net off on Thursday at 4 Central, which is, I got to do my math here, 2,000 hours Zulu. And then we'll open up again on Friday and Saturday right after our daily training net. We have a daily training net Monday through Saturday that starts at 10 o'clock Central and goes through to about 11 o'clock Central. So right after that training net is over, then we'll activate the emergency portion of the net. And that will stay open on Friday and Saturday until propagation ends or until the net manager determines that it's time to close it. Whether we stay activated beyond Saturday is going to depend upon the situation. You know, how bad the damage has been, how much message traffic we're handling on the net, whether we've had any official requests from the Salvation Army or any of our other partners to remain on the air. So we'll assess that probably sometime on Saturday and make a decision about whether we're going to continue the activation beyond that. There is also a international digital net that will meet on 14.065 megahertz, usually using Olivia 8500. And I got to look at my notes here to see the times. It'll be running at the same times as the single sideband net. So again, it'll start at 12 noon Central Time and go through to 1600 Central Time, and then it'll open up again in the morning on Saturday or on Friday and Saturday and stay open until either the net manager closes the net or until propagation ends. There's also a Southern Territory net that meets on 7.265. It's usually a weekend net. Usually just meets on Saturdays. But that net will also open, and it'll open at 8 o'clock in the morning Central and go through to noon Central beginning tomorrow. And it'll do that Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And again, depending on what the situation is, then a determination will be made whether to keep any of the nets open after Saturday. So that's okay. That's basically what we're doing for Florence.
Very good. And if anyone is interested, if you didn't copy all of those frequencies and what they're doing, of course, go to Saturn.org, Saturn.org, and you can probably find out all the info you need. One other thing, bands have not been very cooperative. Do you have a backup on 40? Any plans for that?
If needed, then we'll use the Southern Territory net frequency on 7.265 as a backup. We'll see how it goes. I haven't been able to be on the air the last two or three days because of my job. We've been our division for our three states has been deploying a lot of equipment and a lot of personnel to the Carolinas, getting it staged ahead of the storm. And that's really been taking us 10, 11, 12 hours a day for the last several days to get all that done. So unfortunately, I haven't had time to be on the air.
Completely understandable. Another thing is there a way just, you know, very distant hams or anybody for that matter, can they listen? Is there a Broadcastify channel that you would recommend people tune into?
I am not aware of any Broadcastify channels. I do know that there are some of the remote listing stations that people can use to monitor with. I don't know a whole lot about those, to be honest. But beyond that, I'm not aware of any other methods at this point.
Very good. And you sent us some pictures of some of your equipment and setups. Victor, did you already play that?
Okay, that's our station for WB5ALM, which is the Saturn station at the Emergency Disaster Services Center for our Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi division. That's actually right in my office there. That is our communications trailer and one of the office trailers from our division. It's set up for the 2017 field day. We do a joint field day with several clubs in the area. That's the Texas Division communications vehicle. It was set up for the National Mass Care exercise in Austin, Texas in 2015.
Very
and
nice.
And that's another picture of our communications trailer that we have that's owned by our Southern Territory. Again, the communications trailer, the large trailer in the back is our mobile command post, and that's set up on Galveston Island. This picture came from after Hurricane Ike in 2008.
All right. Well, not too bad. Now, all of those kind of trailers and such take some funding. So you guys actually take donations, don't you?
Yes, we do. And again, excuse me if I look away from the camera. I have to see my notes to remember all of this. But I will say about donations, at least during this beginning response phase of the disaster, financial donations are what are really needed. We just don't have the infrastructure set up, the warehouse and the personnel and so on to receive in-kind donations from, like, you know, neighborhood clothing drives and things of that sort. For financial donations, there are several ways it can be done. You can go to helpsalvationarmy.org, or you can call 1-800-SAL-ARMY, or you can send it to by U.S. mail to Post Office Box 1959, Atlanta, Georgia, 30301, and designate all the checks for the 2018 hurricane season for Florence. We are accepting large corporate contributions of needed in-kind products and services. We're not taking the, you know, the collection drives done by neighborhoods or by a radio station or so on, because we're not set up for that yet. But the large corporate donations, we certainly are, and they can call our corporate liaison at 404-867-7497. Or they can do it online at salvationarmygive.org. And then there's a email address for disaster donations at uss.salvationarmy.org. And that's for large corporations, you know, like Walmart and Target and you know, your very large national level corporations.
Absolutely. And don't worry, we'll post this on our Facebook page. That way everyone will get the information who's out there following us on Facebook. I do have two more quick questions. How long has the Salvation Army been, how long have they been involved in helping in disasters?
Oh, my. Well, the Salvation Army itself started in 1865, so we're well over 150 years old. Our disaster work in the United States, at least, started in 1900 with the Great Galveston Flood of 1900. There were some 5,000 to 8,000 people killed on the island of Galveston in that hurricane. And the national commander for the Salvation Army at that time ordered all of its officers and soldiers to go to Galveston and provide food and emotional care, spiritual care for the people who had been impacted by that hurricane. And we've been at it ever since.
Very nice. That's a long time running. And just a personal question, what's your most memorable situation where you've been involved with Saturn and what you felt like you did the greatest good in?
Okay. For me personally, it was actually last year's hurricane season. We did a lot of work. We were on the air for 32 days over a two-month period, starting with the Great American Eclipse. And then a week later moved into Harvey. And a week or two after that, we're on the air for 8 days for Irma. And then a week after that, we're on the air for 22 days straight for Hurricane Maria. We supported some of our partners, such as the American Red Cross and the ARRL, who sent operators to Puerto Rico to support the Red Cross. And we provided them with our nationwide network for any traffic that they might have coming back into the United States that they weren't able to do, by other methods. I think for Saturn, its biggest moment as a whole, Saturn's been around 30 years, by the way. This is our 30th anniversary. And our biggest moment for Saturn probably would be Hurricane Katrina in 2005. We received about 60,000 messages through the Saturn network. We were able to deliver almost half of them, about 25,000 of those we were able to deliver. Saturn's primary mission is handling health and welfare traffic out of an affected area back into the United States and delivering it to family members. That's our primary mission. We also provide tactical support for the Salvation Army at disaster sites as well as technical support. But our claim to fame, if you will, is handling health and welfare traffic.
Well, that's an awesome job, by the way, 25,000 messages passed on. One final thing. If somebody is interested in getting into Saturn, how do they go about doing it?
The best way to do it is to go to the National Disaster Services website, which is at disaster.salvationarmyusa.org, and you'll see a line of tabs across the top portion of the page, and one of those will be marked volunteer. and you click on that and then follow the instructions, and it will take you through step by step through what you need to do to register as a disaster services volunteer, as well. And then there's a box that you can check to tell us that you want to be a Saturn volunteer as well.
Very good. Well, Bill, I'd really like to thank you tonight for being on here. Bill Feast, everyone, he's going to have a busy next week. Gordo, George, you guys want to say anything before we say goodbye to Bill?
No, Bill, we so much appreciate your leadership, and we're going to be monitoring, although I'll be in the mobile communications unit up in Buellton with the WIN system. We will be tuning you in. So stay safe and hope everybody this weekend remains safe.
Absolutely.
Thank you,
Bill. And we never want natural disasters to happen, but if there's another one, we're going to call you to have you come on and talk about it. So thanks so much for joining us tonight, and you have a wonderful evening. Stay safe, and God bless everyone that you're helping out there.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here today.
Okay.
All right, great interview there, Amanda, and thanks for getting that together on such short notice there. It's really good to hear a lot of details on what the Salvation Army is preparing for. And you know, this thing is just now churning up. It's going to be interesting to see what happens over the weekend. And we are hoping that, wishing best of luck to everyone that's in the path of the storm there. We'll be back in just a moment with Gordo. But first, here's a message from Don Wilbanks and DX Engineering.
Let's talk about antennas for a sec. Whether for portable operation or at your base station, and especially in an emergency situation, just look at the hurricane season we're in the middle of right now. Wire antennas are a proven solution for reliable communication just about everywhere. Now, the good news is you're not going to have to search everywhere for the right wire antenna. You'll find a great selection at one spot, DX Engineering. And DX Engineering is pleased to announce it now carries SodaBeam's lineup of high-performance portable wire antenna kits. All SodaBeam's pre-assembled wire antenna kits are built for fast, easy deployment and excellent receiving and transmitting performance. The Bandhopper multi-band portable dipole antenna gives you a high-efficiency, full-size half-wave dipole on each band. And the kits come with RG174 feed line, DNC connector, a ballon, wire winders, tent stakes, guy rope, storage bag, everything you need. And DX Engineering also carries SodaBeam's half-wave end-fed portable antenna kits for 40 and 20, and the Band Springer MIDI HF portable kit for 60 through 10 meters. And when it comes to portable operation, it's really tough to beat the versatility and performance of a DX Engineering wire antenna kit. The easy-build UWA center T and end insulator kits let you build virtually any wire antenna type, folded dipole, inverted V, off-center fed, Windham, ZEP, loops, you name it. Features an exclusive serpentine wire grip for insulated DX Engineering antenna wire and 300-ohm ladder line. And DX Engineering also sells rugged, lightweight kits for multi-band ladder line-fed dipole antennas. Choose from kits covering 40 through 10 meters, 80 through 10, and 160 through 10. And be sure to choose DX Engineering's premium antenna wire and see the difference it makes over standard bare wire. The relaxed PVC-insulated 14-gauge stranded copper wire has 19 strands of 27-gauge solid copper and rolls out easy without coils and kinks. And it's available in links from 75 to 1,000 feet. DX Engineering is the authorized e-antenna distributor in North America, and that is great news if you're looking for an exceptional multi-band wire antenna. E-antenna multi-band wire antennas are arranged in a unique fan-style design that allows each band dipole to remain separate from the others. This makes it ideal for packing multiple wire antennas in the space typically required for just one. Solidly constructed with high-strength polycarbonate insulators and an SO239 feedline connector. And DX Engineering carries these multi-band fan dipoles in 2-band, 4-band, and 5-band versions covering 80 through 10. DX Engineering, you know it, ships faster than anybody else in the industry. Most orders placed by 10 p.m. Eastern are shipped the same day. With proven products and expert advice, DX Engineering is helping you shrink the globe. Request your catalog or shop online 24-7 at dxengineering.com/hamnation.
And the best part about DX Engineering, as I talked with them a couple of days ago, they say they are shipping out for almost next day delivery plenty of antennas and coax in preparation for the incoming hurricane. And also an interesting product for monitoring the hurricane is a shortwave as well as VHF as well as aeronautical portable radio from Sea Crane.com. This one now has single sideband. So as you can see, we're on 14275, and that is where the National Hurricane Center is going to be parked for the duration of the hurricane. Now, very important, monitor 14275, but don't transmit. Don't ask if there's anything that you can do. They're only looking for those reports coming in from those ham operators that are part of the hurricane network or that they recognize with emergency or priority traffic. And again, a little tiny shortwave radio like this from Sea Crane, which we'll be talking about in the next few weeks, will tune in all of the action. Well, I would suggest their little antenna, a long wire antenna that comes with it as well. Well, let's head up into space and see what one school here in Southern California was able to do. So, Victor, let's head to space. The Amateur Radio International Space Station. This is both an AMSAT as well as ARRL-sponsored activity. And both AMSAT and ARRL have budget money for ARISS. And Rosalie White, and Rosalie with the American Radio Relay League for many, many years, one of her volunteer duties as an ARISS U.S. delegate for the league is to share ARISS information with officials and to help set up those schools here in the United States that will be working to work the International Space Station. And one of the schools was the Mendez Fundamental Intermediate School. Now, this is not a school that just, you know, gets turned on at the last minute. That school will work on the students in the seventh, eighth, and ninth grade. Seventh graders study natural hazard emergency preparedness and can learn all about the roles ham play during disasters, as well as their training in working stations out in outer space. Topics that the school would do include radio wave, light wave, sound waves, electromagnetic spectrum. They have a host of jobs that they do prior to the space station and the space station pass, I would say. Some of those are building a crystal radio, learning about wireless technology, setting up schedules with other hams, build a regenerative receiver. In other words, these schools spend 8 to 10 months in preparation for working the International Space Station that is whizzing overhead at 17,500 miles per hour, and that's 25 times the speed of sound, and it goes around the Earth every 90 minutes, and they have a great pass that was ready to come up. Now, part of their pass information planning is to come up with little signs, little drawings that indicate what the space station is all about. And, well, where's the space station right now?
We kind of crossed California right near Monterey, and right now we're about halfway down the Baja Peninsula heading toward, in Mexico. Over.
Wow. Well, the space station was coming in loud and clear. And of course, the students were really excited to be able to make contact with the space station, as you can see by one of the drawings there. And one of the questions that the students wanted to explore was, how do all the different countries that are up there in the space station, maybe two or three all at the same time, do they all get along? So, wow, they were quite thrilled to be able to have some of their questions answered from outer space. Now, the Mendez School, let me tell you, the hams supporting it, about 25, And there's so many, I won't mention their name, but I will at the end of this portion of the show show you the mentors and volunteers. The school itself has an AV department with, as you can see, the very latest of equipment. And they wanted to present all that was going on through a wonderful PA system that all the kids within the school could hear, as well as the visual. And what a setup they had. And as you can see here, the school kids even did their own interviews of those folks that were in the audience to watch it. We had probably 100 kids, just a fraction of the 1,500 that's part of the school, but 100 kids that were right there to monitor all of the activities going on. And, of course, they had a great shirt to go along. Now, one of the questions that the kids asked, and this is the live response, well, not quite live, but this was the response from the International Space Station. The question is, what are you going to do when you finally get back home to Earth?
I think just soak up hopefully the sunshine and just the smell of Earth, and then probably give a call home to my family and let them know I'll see them the next day. Over.
Well, that's great. The smell of Earth. Well, these kids were waiting, and as the clock ticked down, we heard the space station calling us even before it was above the horizon. And these kids just went crazy. They hooped and they hollered, and they knew that all of their training through the American Radio Relay League and AMSAT programs really got them tuned in for the International Space Station pass. But before the pass, the ARRL, working with Rosalie and all of the mentors and volunteers, gave a nice video of the history of the International Space Station to these 100-plus kids, plus the actual kids that we'll see shortly making the contact. And it's a great program, but it's one that a school really has to work hard to be able to pull off, because both AMSAT and ARRL have a real investment in bringing the space station to these kids in the school. And they need to learn about the astronaut. And the astronaut talking last week to the school was Ricky Arnold. And he was funny. One of the kids, you know, the kids are always going to ask this question. What happens when you have to go to the latrine? What happens when you have to go to bathroom? Well, he had an answer for them.
We have two restrooms on the International Space Station. It's very similar to Earth, but we don't have the benefit of gravity and a really nice indoor plumbing. Over.
Yeah, gravity does make a difference. Well, before the pass, many of the ham radio operators, and there's so many, I don't want to leave anybody out, so I'll hold up the program. You can see they talked about the antennas that would work the space station. Now, this is very special. Some ham radio space station contacts are through an internet gateway. Well, this one was not. This was live and direct. And they first explained all about the antennas. And then they went ahead, and as you can see, there's a real good shot of the two antennas that would track the space station. And, of course, these ham radio operators were, and these are not just for the first time there today, these folks have been working with the school for all of the 6 to 8 months in preparation for this pass. So they're the directional antennas. And in the back of this gentleman is a non-directional antenna as a backup, because you never know if a rotator gets stuck or something like that. Well, they had this tested so many ways that, and these are many folks that were involved with the space industry, that there was no problem with their antenna system. And this was the omnidirectional setup just in case. Well, here's the radio box, and I think it may have come from DX Engineering. There's the ICOM. Looks like an ICOM 9100 that I use regularly. And they had it all set up. They didn't need to run a ton of power because the space station was a nice high pass, and the kids were just glued waiting for the first sound of the astronaut. And a couple of calls, and bingo, NA1SS, NA1 ISS, NA1, yeah, that's got the right, NA1 ISS, or maybe it's NA1SS. Anyway, whatever the call sign was, they got it loud and clear. And the backup station, as you see, was also hearing it loud and clear. So it points out that if you're in a rural school and you don't have a huge antenna system, you can easily hear the space station just on the small omnidirectional antenna. As you can see, this was going to be just about an overhead pass here in Southern California. Well, these are the kids. They excelled in all of their work in getting ready for the International Space Station, and they put in hundreds of hours preparing for this pass, and they each had a question that Rosalie and the ARRL and the AMSAT team and the ARISS team got up to the astronauts ahead of time, and now it was time to wait for the space station. Well, it was still 2 degrees below the horizon, yet their signals started coming in thanks to the great antennas that the hams had pointed toward the direction of the space station coming up. And some of the questions would be, what do you do during your free time and how much free time do you have? And as you can see, the instructor is holding the microphone for the students. And that's a good question, losing stuff. And have you ever lost something in space and had it float by that you found it? And they were just delighted to get an immediate response. There was no lag because the space station was only about 250 to 300 miles away. So it was an easy back and forth. And the astronaut was candid and spoke to all of the students at the Mendez School. The American Radio Relay League and ARISS and AMSAT and all of the volunteers were instrumental in making this happen. And we're looking at Carl Gardenius, the orange section manager for the American Radio Relay League. Los Angeles was also there, section manager. And that is the principal of the school. And this is, I think, right after the pass. And that principal had been holding his breath, waiting for the first words. He was quite happy. That's Gabriel Moreno. And he and his entire staff really did a fabulous job of keeping the space station and the kids all tuned in. Now, so I don't leave anybody out. This was the program of all the hams, and you can see that those hams really worked hard to present the International Space Station program. And the International Space Station program, of course, is the big funding is from the American Radio Relay League and you. And I hope all of you will support the ARISS as well as AMSAT. In fact, in 2 weeks, we're going to have Joe Spear, the AMSAT president, and Carolyn, his wife, right here in the shack talking about the AMSAT satellite program. But thanks to Rosalie White, K1STO, she says that it's easy to donate to the different schools and the whole ARISS project. And the money you would donate is actually going for a lot of the specialized equipment that is keeping the International Space Station hamset on the air. She said simply go to donate ARISS, and it may go to either the ARRL page. And when you sign your check and write it in, put down ARISS as well as ARRL. So I apologize for not mentioning all the names and call signs, but as you can see here, there were so many that made this happen. So I hope all of you will have an opportunity to watch what happens in a school when they are working the International Space Station. And ideally, they'll have equipment that worked flawlessly, both as the backup as well as the main station, such as the ICOM 9100. So let's jump over to ICOM America and see what's new for this week in ham radio gear. ICOM!
Heard it, worked it, logged it. It's time to get the transceiver that's best suited for your lifestyle. ICOM offers a variety of high-performance and innovative products. See how you can make the most out of contest season with these transceivers. The competitive edge you've been looking for, raise the bar and hear what others cannot with this flagship HF 50 MHz transceiver, the IC7851. Reciprocal mixing dynamic range, crystal clear local oscillator design, spectrum scope, dual receivers, and digital voice recorder. The IC7610 is the SDR every ham wants and just in time for contesting season. This high-performance SDR has the ability to pick out the faintest signals even in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. The new ICOM IC7610 is a direct sampling software-defined radio that will change the world's definition of a SDR transceiver. RF direct sampling, 110 RMDR, independent dual receiver, dual digicell. IC7300 is changing the way entry-level HF is designed. This high-performance, innovative HF transceiver with a compact design will far exceed your expectations. RF direct sampling, 15 discrete bandpass filters, large 4.3-inch color touchscreen, real-time spectrum scope, and SD memory card slot. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information on all the great ICOM radios. And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation. Register to win great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. And while you're there, learn how you can win in the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio for September. That's the ICOM ID5100A VHF, UHF, dual band D-Star transceiver. It's got a large touchscreen display, simultaneous FM, FM-DV, and DV-DV dual watch, built-in GPS, and there's available a UT133 Bluetooth board that works with the RSMS1A Android app. So go to ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation after this and each episode of Ham Nation and register to win. Sign up, good luck, and don't forget to follow ICOM America, Inc., on Facebook and Twitter. And if you'd like to win an IC7300 from ICOM here, the great entry-level software-defined radio, well, I'll tell you how you can win one of those. We'll be giving away one in October on Amateur Logic to celebrate our 13th anniversary. You can go to amateurlogic.tv/contest. Get the details there. We'll have the IC7300 and the complete ham station, an MFJ power supply, MFJ big stick antenna, Howl microphones, Howl headset, and Gordon West amateur radio study guides. So great prize package there for someone. Might as well be you. So go check out the details and register today if you haven't already. And now, for all the news that's in the amateur radio news, it's our newsman, Don Wilbanks.
From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2132, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, September 12, 2018. AMSAT is looking for some help in tracking down some interference to the uplink frequency of its newest satellite.
Drew Glassbrenner, KO4MA, Vice President of Operations at AMSAT, tells us what's happening.
We've been having issues on AO92 recently with QRM on the uplink frequency, and you can tell that it's DMR, but because it's being filtered through the computer on the satellite and the audio process, we can't decode it right now. We have a pretty good idea of where it is, most likely in the Midwest or maybe in the Colorado mountain area, and it's fairly strong when it's there.
If you're operating anything, a hotspot, repeater, or just running simplex in the satellite subbands, which are 145.8 to 146.0 and 435 megahertz to 438 megahertz, AMSAT is putting out a plea for those stations to move out of those frequencies.
If anybody does hear it locally and not through the satellite, please let us know. Any help we can get from satellite users or people that just happen to be listening and hear and know where it is would be very welcome.
Reporting for Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Neil Rapp, WB9VPG.
If you're a digital radio enthusiast and haven't registered yet for the 37th annual ARRL Tapper Digital Communications Conference taking place September 14th through the 16th in Albuquerque, New Mexico, there's still time.
The agenda features 2 days of technical forums on that Friday and Saturday, with introductory forums on Saturday, followed by what organizers are calling a Sunday morning seminar deep dive. The two banquet speakers will be Philip J. Eckerson, W1PJE, Assistant Director and Head of the Atmospheric and Geospace Sciences Group at MIT's Haystack Observatory, and Nathaniel Frizzell, W2NAF, Assistant Research Professor at the Center for Solar Terrestrial Research at the New Jersey Institute of Technology. TAPR is amateur radio's leading digital technology organization. For details or to register, visit tapr.org/DCC. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Dave Parks, WB8ODF.
Rarely does the average person enjoy just a single hobby. Philately, or the study of stamps, better known as stamp collecting, is a very popular avocation worldwide, and it overlaps with amateur radio very well. There have been ham radio stamps before. Here's Newsline's own staff philatelist with another to add to that list.
Hams competing in the amateur radio direction-finding world championships in Korea may have something to write home about. And now they have a special postage stamp they can use to send their message home from Korea. A report by the Korea Stamp Society shows the commemorative postage stamp being issued by Korea Post to mark the 19th global event, concluding September 8. At least 30 nations were represented in the challenge, which takes place every 2 years. The stamps have been printed as a sheet of 16, with each stamp carrying a value of 330 South Korean won, or about 30 cents in US currency. It shows two competitors engaged in the contest's activities, which include the search for hidden transmitters or fox hunting. This year's event was hosted by the Korean Amateur Radio League. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm philatelist Graham Kemp, VK4BB.
And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at arnewsline.org. With Neil Rapp, WB9VPG, Dave Parks, WB8ODF, Graham Kemp, VK4BB, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. 73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now, here's the solar update with Dr. Tamitha Scove, WX6SWW.
We have a snake-like coronal hole that's rotating into the Earth strike zone now, and a bright region has emerged on the Earth-facing disk. What does that mean for you? Those stories and more in the Shorty this week. Space weather this week has gotten very exciting. We have a long snake-like coronal hole that has rotated into the Earth strike zone right now. It's been sending us some fast wind, and we're already beginning to feel its effects. We've bumped up the storm levels already as of this posting, and aurora is beginning to brighten. So aurora photographers, you should be very happy. Expect these conditions to continue easily for the next 24 to 48 hours. On top of that, we do have a new bright region that has emerged on the Earth-facing disk. It is an active region and has been given a number, and it has also boosted the solar flux up to marginal levels for radio propagation. So amateur radio operators and emergency responders responding to the Hurricane Florence, you should be very happy, because these marginal levels for propagation should continue easily over the next couple days until this region rotates out of Earth view. Switching to your solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we have been anticipating the hit from that fast solar wind, and indeed it has arrived with a punch. At high latitudes, NOAA's been expecting major storm conditions. As a matter of fact, about an 80% chance of a major storm, and we have definitely reached that. At mid-latitudes, we've been expecting minor storm conditions with about a 25% chance of a major storm, and we might actually see that. We're at G1 levels now, and we might actually make it to G2 levels here in the next day or so. Now, unfortunately, these storm conditions will continue through potentially Thursday before things begin to calm down, especially at high latitudes. So this means for those emergency responders for Hurricane Florence, as this hurricane begins to make landfall, you may still be dealing with some radio noise on the bands, especially as the sun begins to go down and in through the nighttime. So expect those issues to continue for you for a little while. But things, as we move into the weekend, things should be quieting down, and it should be smooth sailing after that. Switching to our solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, everything is still in the green when it comes to solar flares. We do have a new active region on the Earth facing sun. That's region 2721, but it is not a flare producer, so we don't have to worry about radio blackouts. The good thing, though, is that it is producing enough solar flux to boost us back into the marginal range for radio propagation on Earth's day side, and that will continue easily over the next few days until this region rotates out of Earth view. Now, also, because we are at solar minimum, we do have to worry about the cosmic ray penetration, which is a little bit higher than normal. So you frequent flyers, that includes you air crew that fly over 800 hours annually, and you fly at high latitudes and high altitudes, you are now in the marginal range for radiation dose. So please take this into consideration in your flight plans. So the space weather this week is very exciting. We're already feeling the effects from the fast wind that we've been expecting from this coronal hole that's rotated into the Earth strike zone right now. It's already bumped us up to a G1 level storm, and it could bump us up to G2 level storms here over the next 24 hours or so. So you aurora photographers, even down to mid-latitudes, you should be getting some beautiful shows over the next couple of days. Now, emergency responders and amateur radio operators responding to Hurricane Florence, well, things aren't looking too great right now. We are in storm conditions, and that means the bands most likely are really bad, and they'll continue to be that way easily over the next day or so. They might even get worse before they get better, especially on Earth's night side. The one good thing, though, is that as we move into the weekend, things should begin to clear up, and hopefully the storm will kind of have settled down before Florence actually hits land. Now, for GPS users, well, this storm's pretty strong, so you might actually be having some issues too, even down to mid-latitudes. So be sure to stay clear of the Dawn Dust Terminators and definitely clear of Aurora, and you should have a better chance. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
And thank you, Dr. T. And Don Wilbanks. Don will be back next week. Maybe Dr. T will. You know, I was thinking it'd be nice to have her on tonight with the weather and all approaching, but different weather zone there. So I'll be glad when we get some propagation again, though. And maybe she'll bring us some soon. Well, you know, a number of years ago, I don't even remember when it was, but back in episode 10, of Ham Nation, I built a pine board radio myself, and I just thought this week we might go back and look at that. If you're looking for something simple to build, you may already have most of the parts you need for this just laying around in the junk box there. You might want to try a crystal radio. Here's a kit that I built that came from MFJ.
I looked in the book for the crystal radio kit, and one of the first things they mention is sanding and staining the wood. And that sounds like a good idea. I'll probably want to hang on to this kit. It looks real nice.
We should have 8 Phillips head screws, a 5-inch length of white, 2.5-inch diameter PVC pipe. We've got 100 foot of 18-gauge enamel-coated wire. We have 6 Fonstock clips. We have a tuning capacitor with an extension shaft. We have a knob for the capacitor. We have a little piece of double-sided foam tape. We've got 1 earphone, and I believe this is probably a high-impedance earphone. We've got a piece of pine board. We've got 7 feet of insulated stranded wire. We've got a 27 k-ohm resistor, and that's red, violet, orange, gold. And we've got a 1N34A germanium diode. There are a few tools and supplies we'll need to build the kit. First, we'll need a Phillips head screwdriver. We'll need long nose pliers. We'll need wire cutters. We'll need a tape measure or a ruler. A pen knife or an X-Acto knife. A small hammer. An Allen wrench that will fit the knob. We'll need some masking tape and some super glue. We won't need a soldering iron for this at all. According to the instructions, you should use a nail to drill some holes into the board, going by the template that's included with the kit. Now, I'm going to use a drill on these because I want them to look a little nicer. So what I'll do is just take a punch here, and I'll make a little hole through to the board for everywhere that I'm going to drill. Phase two of the kit involves winding the coil. We're going to have approximately 66 turns of this wire, which will be about 52 feet. Now, it's not important exactly the number of turns that you have. What is important is that we want to make the length of the coil 2.5 inches long. That took a little while to do. I found the secret was follow the instructions in the book, do a few windings first, get them on there good, then use a little super glue to tack them down. After that, I was able to wind the rest of it fairly easily, and when I got through, I just ran a couple of beads of super glue down that to hold it together. And the coil is ready. That's probably the hardest part of the project. It's time to move to phase three of building the kit, and that is mounting the fanstock clips. Now it's time to mount the coil to the board. Off to phase four of the kit. On the left-hand side of the coil, we'll need to remove the varnish off the end of the wire here. Now, we can either do that with the X-Acto knife, or we can use a piece of sandpaper. Now, this is going to take a little while, but we want to go through all the steps in the book and make sure that we install the wiring in the correct position. Looks like our board wiring is about complete. The wire comes off the left-hand side of the coil, goes to this clip, comes around, loops under this clip, and goes out. The wire from the right-hand side of the coil comes all the way down to the bottom clip, loops across it, comes under this clip, and then out. And then there is one jumper wire between the earphone and the detector right here. Now, these are not connected right here. That's just one passing over the other. Our next step is to take the 27 k-ohm resistor and put it across the speaker clips. A resistor has no polarity, so it doesn't matter which end goes to which clip here. However, a diode is polarized. We take the germanium diode, we'll put the cathode side of the diode into the detector clip that goes to one of the speaker clips. The cathode is the side of the diode that has a line on it. And there we go. Now, according to the instructions that come with the kit, you should twist these wires around these posts. And if you don't have a soldering iron, that's a good way to do it. I may have mentioned earlier that we wouldn't be using any solder this time. Well, I lied. I'm going to use a little solder on this capacitor here. So we're going to put on the knob now. And we've turned it all the way counterclockwise. Let's loosen up the little Allen screw that's in here. Or some people call it a hex screw, I guess. And we'll tighten it up, putting the knob at approximately the 9 o'clock position. Okay, so it looks like it goes from about 9 o'clock to 3 o'clock. Remember the stranded wire that came with the kit? Well, that is going to be hooked to the ground clip, and that'll run to my ground system over here. I'm a ham radio operator, so I do have a ground system in here, and it's an 8-foot rod that runs down on the ground right outside the building here. If you don't have something like that, you could hook it to a cold water pipe as long as it's metal. PVC obviously wouldn't work. Or you might hook it to a radiator system in a building. Whatever you can find that'll get you into the ground. If you can't actually get a pipe or a rod that's run in the ground,
you can just lay some wire out across the ground and that will work as well. We've got our ground wire connected. We've got the little high impedance, what is this? It says receiver on it. The little earplug. And we're going to hook that to the two clips over here on the right-hand side of the board. And now we're about ready to start listening to Glorious AM Radio. One thing left. That's the antenna. And we had a good bit of this enamel-coated wire left. And that can be used as the antenna, or we can run another wire. 30 feet or so outside would probably be good. If you want to run more than that, that's even better. And now our antenna is connected. So, let's turn on the power. Well, there is no power. It's powered by the radio signals coming out of the air. And we will show you next week if it worked or not. That was a fun little kit. You know, if you've never built a crystal radio before, you really should. I've built a lot of them dating back to when I was a kid. And my early attempts didn't work, but I lived too far away from the radio stations, I guess. Anyway, the last couple I built. Well, we'll see next week how they work out. We'll be back in just a moment because I've got some stuff to give away. But first, Don's got a message from FreshBooks.
Hey, if you're like me, about the only accounting you really want to do is keeping track of your DXCC, right? Well, this episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by FreshBooks. Most accounting software is built for accountants, not business owners. FreshBooks is an owner-first accounting platform that puts you, the small business owner, back in control of your business. FreshBooks Approachable Accounting is full industry standard double entry accounting that enables painless automatic bookkeeping and reporting. You can quickly generate and access accounting reports like the general ledger, trial balance, chart of accounts in the FreshBooks dashboard and share those reports with your accountant or financial advisor. You can send professional looking invoices in seconds and you can see sent, viewed, paid and overdue invoices. You can accept online payments directly from your invoice and get paid an average of 2 times faster. Create proposals with rich text, context, and images. Request your client's e-signature as they accept proposals, too. Send invoices, estimates, and proposals in multiple languages. FreshBooks automatically connects to your bank account and updates expenses daily. Import expenses in bulk or take a picture of a receipt, upload it, and let FreshBooks do the rest. You can keep tabs on your business no matter where you are with the FreshBooks mobile app. And if you're still conquering the day-to-day tasks of creating invoices and collecting payments, FreshBooks is the magic wand you've been looking for. And if you have great ambitions and need robust accounting, FreshBooks can grow with you. No matter what your accounting needs are, FreshBooks will help put you in the driver's seat. Join the 24 million people who've used FreshBooks to painlessly send invoices, track time, and capture expenses, and get back to doing what you love, like counting your QSL cards. Try FreshBooks free for 30 days at FreshBooks.com/HamNation and enter HamNation in the How Did You Hear Us section. That's FreshBooks.com/HamNation, and we thank FreshBooks for their support of HamNation.
Just for a moment, I hate to interrupt. Susie figured it out. Here's the call sign of the International Space Station. They say it quick. Listen.
November Alpha 1 Sierra Sierra out. Thank you.
November Alpha 1 Sierra Sierra on a crystal radio. George, back to you.
Well, I'm glad we cleared that up. It's probably the only signal you'll be hearing from outer space. Well, that's not outer space, is it? Maybe inner space. Anyway, thanks for that. Well, just for that, I'm going to give away, one of your books here, Gordo, either the extra class or the general class guide. We asked a question last week out of the extra class, and this one was a little bit tougher. What type of coordinate system is used in a Smith chart? Is it voltage circles and current arcs, resistance circles and reactance arcs, voltage lines and current cords, and resistance lines and reactance cords? And it's not C-O-R-D-S, it's C-H-O-R-D-S. Well, I don't think that would be it. And neither did Dave Hartman. He said that it's resistance circles and reactance arcs. And that's correct, Dave. You're going to win one of Gordo's great study guides here. We got the general and the extra right here. And just tell Gordo which one you want. If you're already an extra, well, then you can pass it on to one of your buddies that you'd like to help upgrade or get into the hobby. Thanks for that, Gordon West Radio School and W5YI. And for next week, well, I've got another question. This one's kind of in context here. You know, we were talking about the crystal radio there, and that next week we're going to be showing a little more about it, whether it worked. We'll also be doing some hacks on that radio as well. If you don't remember it, you might want to tune in for that. That was 357 episodes ago. So, yeah, the video was interlaced using completely different equipment back then, but that has been a couple of years at least. I'm not sure how many years it was. I couldn't find it quickly when I did a search there of how long ago episode 10 was. Anyway, the question I've got for you is, with better radio designs available at that time, why were crystal radios popular during World War II in Europe? There's a good reason for that. No, not just because you could build it out of parts that you could find laying around. There was another very important reason that crystal radios were used. If you think you know the answer to that, send it to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you could win a DX Engineering silkscreen t-shirt. No, not this one. This one is mine, and I'm keeping it, but they've got plenty of them at dxengineering.com, and they'll be happy to send one to whoever gives me the correct answer on that question next week in the drawing. So, I guess that's going to do it for me right here. I did want to mention that Friday night this week at 8 Central Daylight Time, 8 p.m. that is, we're going to be doing the next AmateurLogic.tv, so join us there. And now, Amanda, I know that you've got some questions tonight because I've kept my eye on the chat room. I've been kind of quiet in there, but I've kept my eye on it, and people have inquiring minds.
They actually do. We have some pretty good questions tonight. This first one, George, I'm going to send to you. Which is better, a ferrite choke or coiled coax?
It all depends. You can use either one. It depends on what you're trying to do with it. I have used both of them. I won't say that one is necessarily better. Yeah, probably a ferrite bead is going to allow you to get more inductance, but you may not necessarily need more inductance. You know, you might only need enough that you can get it out of coiled coax. So, I'm not sure that a ferrite bead would be better in every case. What do you think, Gordo? That's a good question.
No, I think it is great, and you're absolutely correct. The ferrite donuts or the clamp-on ferrites are wonderful because you can continue to add them. But if you just need a little bit of inductance to keep any RF from a feed point coming back down the coax, just take coax and run it nice and neat, about 5 turns. Take some tape and tape them up nice and neat, and you'll be ready to roll. And I'll try and come up with my ferrite choke made out of coax. So coax is already there, so use up that little bit of extra that you might have.
Very good. Now, this is a pretty cool question. Gordo, this is you all the way because you are the tropo ducting expert. Chumley was talking in the chat room and he was talking about, so if I'm here in California and tropo is bad here, then it's bad everywhere, such as Kansas. Now, pretty sure that's not how tropospheric ducting works. You want to give us a little bit of an explanation? I know you have some awesome charts that you probably don't have ready to show us, but give us a rundown.
Sure. Everybody has seen a mirage where you look down at a superheated highway and you see water. Well, it's not water. That's actually the sky above being refracted by the sharp, warm air boundary. Well, on a tropo, and we're just about at the end of the tropo season for the entire country, we have a high pressure system that begins to settle down because the air is heavier because it's high pressure system. And as that air begins to subside, it squishes the air below it, and that develops a band that you can actually see, such as in my tropo machine here. And what occurs is the radio waves get caught up in that generally 10 degree above the air temperature, 10 degrees above the air temperature below it. And that band will act as a waveguide and cause VHF and UHF signals to travel hundreds, even thousands of miles to follow that tropo duct. And also the tropo may occur coming up in another day on the East Coast as that storm front begins to collide with air pressure from the north, maybe much higher air pressure than the 900 millibar low. You may also get tropo enhancement there where the signals skirt along that division between low pressure and high pressure and come back down. But I have a feeling most hams on the East Coast will not be operating during the height of the storm. Hope that helps, Amanda.
It does. And I think I have my own example. We have several repeaters here in Colorado. And at certain times, all of a sudden, this path opens and we are sharing the same frequency on our repeater as there is one in Kansas. Ridiculous. And all of a sudden, you hear this echo on the repeater when you're talking and you're going, what is going on? What is this I'm hearing? I don't have another radio on in the background. I do believe it's the same thing. I might be wrong, but I think so. Anyhow, great explanation, Gordo. Appreciate that. I have another question for you. Andy KP4AAN says, can you have Gordo explain the difference between an FIR filter and an IIR filter and how to use them?
No. I am not an expert on those type of filters. So, nope, I might let George or maybe Bob, but the inner workings of filters is beyond my training level. Sorry.
Oh, something Gordo can't answer, you guys and gals, mark this on the calendar right now, because Gordo's our expert here. George, anything?
Hey, if Gordo's not going to touch it, I'm certainly not. I know what an FIR filter is, but I don't know what that other one that you mentioned was.
Yeah,
there.
That's a weird one.
And that's not analog filters that you're going to wind with a piece of wire or something like that. That's a little more complex mathematically than that. So, yeah, it's kind of just went right on past me.
Okay, well, we're going to have to save that question to ask Bob. All right. I'm going to wrap it up here. I'm just going to go over a few announcements. Unfortunately, we have a new SK in the ham world. Paul, W9DWP is an SK as of today. I'm sorry. Rest in peace. And of all of his ham friends out there, I'm sorry for your loss. Also, we have the CFMC Radio Expo on September 22nd at the Boone County Fairgrounds in Belvedere, Illinois. Also coming up is the Rocky Mountain Division ARRL convention, and that is September 22nd. Well, it's probably September 21st, 22nd. I know Bob's going to be there. That's also known as the Duke City Ham Fest. Let's see. We have the 40-meter net they're going to try on 7192. Unfortunately, propagation is not friendly tonight. Steve W7UDI said that there is absolutely not going to be a 20-meter net. Don't forget, we have 14 Charlie for the D-Star net and TAC 311 for the DMR net. and do drop in for the EchoLink net. Other than that, that's all I've got. Thanks for the wonderful show.
Well, thank you, Amanda, and great interview there that you pulled together here at the last minute. And boy, we just wish everyone good luck through the storm there. That has really looked like a serious one. I know it has weakened slightly, but still, it's going to be rough up there a few days. All right, thanks for being here tonight, everyone. Before we go, any final words, Gordo?
Final words would be the space station saying goodbye to the school.
I'm spending time with you. I wish you all the best for the upcoming school year and encourage you to study hard, work hard, and set your goals high. Over.
Wow, that was great. So no further traffic. Be safe, those of you on the East Coast and Gulf Coast. And we'll hear you hopefully on the WIN system. That's an IRLP, winsystem.org, this weekend as we have our big powwow up in Buellton with our communications van. See you there.
Okay, Gordo. Sounds like a lot of fun there. Well, we'll be back next week with another episode. Don should be back then, and I believe Bob will be back with us as well. So looking forward to that. Join us next Wednesday night at the same time. Until then, everyone stay safe. If you hear hurricane traffic on the air there or emergency traffic, please don't transmit on those frequencies. You can listen, but please don't transmit there and cause any issues, because they really need all the help they can get. All right, 7-3, everyone. See you next week.